Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello and welcome to the Clan Blue podcast. It's international break, so it's time for us to do something a little bit different to pass the time, basically, and pass your time tuning into this episode as well. This is part three of Aston Villa Confessions. If you've missed part one and part two, you don't need to have seen those to watch this, but if you enjoy this, those two are more of the same. I'll put the links in the description to episodes one and two. It's just me and John for this one. So, John, before we get into it, how are you, mate? You okay?
Yeah, doing well, thank you, Dan. International break is always horribly boring, so we've still got to bring out the content, and the content isn't going to lack in quality, is it? It's just the change.
Of course not.
From match previews and post-match reactions of Aston Villa victories. So I'm doing well, but I'm dreading the weekend, to be honest. I am working Saturday and Sunday, and I don't know what to do.
That's interesting. Yeah. I've got Saturday and Sunday off.
What would I do on my day off on a Saturday and Sunday? Which sounds crazy. Sounds like I have no life. I probably don't, apart from Villa and football. and that exposes it, so I actually don't mind working, really. It just gives me something to do.
All right, well, we're going to alleviate some of that boredom, or we're going to try to, at least, anyway, with Aston Villa Confessions. I'm going to dive straight in. We've got a random selection. I think there's 10, 12. It depends how many get included in the edit. First up, it's a football-related one. John, you'll be pleased to know. This person says, I don't think Buendia coming back is the solution to our low block problems. I feel like he's massively overhyped since he's not available, and people will probably be disappointed by their own fantasies when he's back. Don't get me wrong, I like him and he's a good player with moments of quality, but I'm not sure he's at the level we need now. I think it's borderline harsh, or it is harsh, that he's not the level and stuff and he's overhyped. I don't think that's quite true, no. But just away from Buendia as the individual, there is something, whether it's a football fan thing generally or just Aston Villa, there is always a little bit of like, so-and-so's not in the team, they must be the answer. Morgan Sanson not getting a pick, let's get him in, give him a go. Cameron Archer not getting any minutes, give him a go. Like, there's always a little bit of that, isn't there?
There is. I don't think this quite fits into that category.
No, it doesn't.
What I would say would be, I mean, the first part of the question is, Emi Buendia, everyone's expecting him to be something that he isn't, that sort of thing. I disagree, to be honest. I think we all know that Buendia is basically a squad player. I know we signed him for a lot of money, and I think we expected him to be, maybe make a bigger impact to what he did when he first joined. It's hard to say underwhelming. That might sound a bit harsh because Villa weren't very good up until November of 2022 when Unai Emery joined the football club. So, I'm not going to criticise Buendia too much because not many players were very good up until Buendia joined and Emery joined that period of time. So, I think when he comes back, he'll be a very useful part of the team. And what I would say as well, he was our best player in pre-season and he was looking really sharp. He was excellent over in the USA. And I know you can't take too much from games against Lazio and Valencia as well, but he was looking really sharp, and I'm certain that he would have contributed this season much more than what he had done in previous seasons, if that makes sense. So I disagree with the sentiment that he's going to come back and he's going to be underwhelming and fans aren't going to you know, kind of take to him again, that sort of stuff. I disagree with that. I think that he will come back. And if he comes back, you know, makes, I don't want to say a full recovery. I don't know quite how to put it, but you know what I mean? When you have an ACL, you don't know exactly what, you know, player is going to come back from that. Hopefully Buendia, as I say, makes, I say, full recovery, you know what I mean? And we can look at the player then and analyse what we're looking at. But yeah, he's not going to be the best player in the team, but he's definitely not going to be a player who doesn't get games and is only going to be on the bench. I think he's got a big part to play. We'll be in Europe again, whether that's Champions League, Europa League, one of the two. So yeah, I think he has the potential to have a big season next year is what I'm trying to get at, because I think he would have had that this season. I just hope the ACL hasn't affected him, you know, affected his career, I suppose, because that is what can happen with these ACL injuries. But the positive is that, you know, he hasn't taken too many months to get back on the grass. This is kind of the quickest he could have done his recovery in, I think. He's back out on the grass now. He's not doing any contact with his teammates. He's in physical contact, obviously speaking to them. But he's just playing with the ball at the moment, like individual work, which is, you know, a big positive.
I enjoyed that. And when you offered the chances for European competition, you didn't stoop as far down to Conference League. It's definitely going to be Champions League or Europa League.
I know that I probably get criticised a lot for being a bit negative, or maybe very negative, I don't know. But yeah, I'm not going to go that down that far.
Next one, something a little bit different, or very different. I once sent, these are always worse when they're in the first person, because people click these up out of context if I'm saying it, it's my story. But this person says, I once sent Juan Pablo Engel a Valentine's card to Villa Park, which had a note inside asking him to get his hairdresser to ring me. He did. Juan Pablo Engel calling fans who asked for his phone number, allegedly.
Is this the confession?
That is it. It kind of leaves the story slightly underwhelming, doesn't it? What happened next? We can only speculate.
Yeah, I want to know more. What was the conversation like? What happens next, exactly? Thanks for sharing your story, but I feel like it's missing a big part. Yeah,
it's missing a big part for a reason, because they don't want to disclose what happened next. Maybe it wasn't just a conversation, John.
But I don't know if you would reveal the story if it was such a, like, a negative experience. It sounds quite positive. So, please get back in touch.
Are you both assuming that this is a woman who contacted Juan Pablo Engel and he replied, or is this a man? We don't know.
No. I was assuming it was a guy, to be fair. But
it's a Valentine's card. I was assuming it was a woman.
Oh, of course it was. Well, yeah, exactly. It could be either. Either or. So I'm kind of going, you put me in a trap here. What are you doing?
Let's go football related again for the next one. Again, short and sweet. Brad Guzan was seriously underrated by our fan base.
He had one extraordinary season, didn't he?
Yeah.
Was it 13-14, I think? We had the Betway, and he had like a yellow and black, or green and black.
Betway? That weren't us.
Betway? Was it not Betway? No, it wasn't Betway.
I'm going to kick myself. I know it's not Betway. I've got the shirt here somewhere. Is that the one?
Daffabet.
Not a B. There's a D.
Was it a big D? A big D in the middle of the shirt? Don't think he was up to much. I mean, he passed it into his own net, didn't he? At the Etihad. So, you know, modern football, would he be able to play as modern keepers do? I don't know. Probably not. He could, you know, boot the ball with his left foot. He had a good ping, but, you know, it was hardly like Pepe Reina sort of thing. So, yeah, I don't know. He was underrated for one season, I'd say, when he was very good. But apart from that, I think he was pretty average.
For someone who was, again, I'm guessing off the top of my head without researching it, would have been still a decent enough age when he left Villa. Didn't go on to play for another Premier League club or anything like that. You would assume a good keeper at his age would go on to.
I think he's still playing in the MLS. I'm not too sure. He was for many years and he's getting on now. But what's the one word that comes to mind when you think of Brad Guzan? Because to be fair, mine would probably be underrated.
Mine would be a mistake. I just feel like he had a mistake in him, and just like he made me nervous. And
really, I don't think he was that bad, you know, in that season especially. But yeah, apart from that, I wasn't, you know, particularly amazing. Just average, I thought.
Yeah, well, the ability that we're not doing this live allows me to correct myself. Brad Guzan is 39 now. He left Aston Villa in the summer of 2016. So what's that? 8 years ago, so he'd have been in his early 30s. So I'm right about, like, he was still at a decent age, especially for a goalkeeper. Played for Middlesbrough, who were newly promoted, so he did go on to play for another Premier League club. and then went to Atalanta United in the January of the 2017. So he was only at Middlesbrough for 6 months, and then he's been there ever since. So kind of right in a sense that he didn't go on to play in his mid-30s at a high level, when you'd think a good goalkeeper would go on to do that. But he's still forged a good career for himself, hasn't he, Bradley Guzan?
Yeah, and I think he would be able to have played for more English clubs, should we say. I think he probably just wanted to go back home to America, maybe.
Yeah.
And Atlanta, it's pretty cool playing for Atlanta, I suppose. They're a big team over there, big franchise, playing in front of a big crowd, you know, that sort of thing. I'm just a bit stunned. 8 years ago was when we were relegated. I don't know what to make of that. I don't know whether it feels like ages ago or not long ago, but 8 years is... So where does time go? Wow.
Let's move on next to this one. When I was 11, my dad took me to Villa Park. I watched Dwight York's first ever performance when he was 17, and I told my dad, he's crap. I want to go home and play Street Fighter. Now, not the best analysis from an 11-year-old to dub Dwight York crap. So I wanted to include this one to have a kind of discussion of whether you have ever...
Played Street Fighter.
No, whether have you heard of Street Fighter? whether you've ever rightly or wrongly written off a player so early. Yes. So, you have?
Oh, no, I said yes, I understand the question, and I need time to think about this. There must have been, I'm not going to be one of those people who just say, no, I've never written anyone off, like, I know ball, you know, that sort of thing. There must have been, but I can't think of any conveniently. No. I actually can't think of anyone like that jumps out of my head, but there will be people and players that have, not people that I've written off, players that I've written off.
What about the reverse? Is there anyone who you've straight away spotted and thought, he's a great player, like I'm expecting him to be good?
You're looking for like a player who was pretty poor and turned good. That's the...
Brad Guzan? Yeah, one I can think of, and this isn't that I thought he was going to be good and no one else did.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I thought Nzogbia was going to do something for us when we signed him, because he'd done well at Wigan, hadn't he? Figures for goals, maybe, off the top of my head. And I thought, oh, he's a decent player. He's tricky, left footy, can take a free kick. And I'm not saying that I wasn't the only one to think that, Like, we probably signed him with expectation of, was it 10 million? I thought he was going to go on to have a decent career for Villa and a decent season that year. And obviously that turned into a bit of a disaster. Whether that quite fits the remit, I'm not sure.
I don't know. I mean, just what I'm trying to go for, like the England squad, and the one that I can remember a little bit was probably like John Stones. At one period of time, I really didn't rate John Stones like at all, because I thought he'd get bullied and I thought he was weak. I thought he was like easy to get at. I remember when, was it El Ghazi put him on the floor in the cup final and stuff like that. And I just thought, there's no coming back for John Stones. And now I probably think he's one of the best defenders in the world. I'm trying to think of Villa players, but a lot of them I probably expect to be good and aren't, so there's probably quite a lot.
We've mentioned two of these players in this next one, Grealish and York, in different answers. They say, I don't get it when fans hate on a player when they've left after they've put a good shift in, like Grealish or York. Why could we not just give them our best and move on? They owe us nothing and we did good business off the back of them. It was mutually beneficial for all. Are you of that mindset as well, or are you a little bit like angsty about it? I can't believe you left.
I agree with the question, but then when he said Grealish, I kind of thought, well, there was reasons why Villa fans are kind of, or they were, you know, booing him and, you know, singing Villa till I die. And I think it's because he comes out with the statements and, you know, this is my club, but I've, you know, accepted a release clause. And it's like, okay, you know, that's fine, but probably shouldn't have said the bit about, you know, I want to be at
this club. My club and all that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, which that is all fine. But then you probably want to say, but there's a release clause. I know that's not really his job or his prerogative to do it, but it was kind of like, I've got a big secret, so I'm going to kind of lead the Villa fans on a little bit. Again, like, you know, time is a healer sort of thing. We'll all forgive him eventually, I think, maybe, some of us. But yeah, that's why I think Villa fans kind of had a grudge against Jack, because there was stuff said and, you know, a lot probably hidden.
I think the frustration around, like, letting go, and, you know, they've done their best, Villa made money out of it, all that kind of thing. I think that narrative is slightly dependent on the player that's left is good as well, because it's kind of like, well, I can forgive them because both the players mentioned there, York and Benteke? York and Grealish went to clubs that went on to win the treble. It's kind of like, well, I left for football reasons, whether you believe money and all that kind of stuff. They left to go to a better club and they've back that up with trophies. So in that instance, I kind of go, oh yeah, fair enough. Like, that's the food chain of football. When it's a player that you don't like or you don't rate, or they go on to have a crap career, I can kind of get there and they're like, I'm going to boo that player, and because I think, oh yeah, you left a good thing for that. Like, I think that makes more sense.
I think there's no reason to boo unless there is a reason, but the reason has to be something like, you know, like the Grealish thing. Again, it's all kind of pantomime, really. But, you know, him saying...
Like Fabian Delph.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you would boo that. Of course you would. And Delph would expect it. I think Grealish would have probably expected some boos as well, because, again, he said what he said and then he left. And it's like, if Grealish left Villa for £100 million without saying that, you know, this is my club and I want to stay here and blah, blah, blah forever, that sort of thing. I know he didn't say the exact words, but he kind of alluded to it. And he didn't say he was going to stay for 1 year, did he? But he said everything that he said, you know, kind of lapped it up and then left. If he didn't do that, I wouldn't boo him. I mean, I didn't boo him anyway, but I wouldn't get booed because there was no real reason.
Hypothetical scenario, Jack Grealish signs his new deal in whatever year it was, 2022, I don't know, 2021, whatever.
Yeah.
And he comes out and says, sit down interview kind of thing. I've signed a contract. I will only be here for a year. There is a release clause. We expect somebody to match that clause next season, but I'm here, I'm focused, I want to get Villa into the Europa League, and I will give my all for 1 year. We can have a nice send-off at the end of the month, at the end of the year, but I will be going. That's why I've signed the contract. It will help Villa in the long run. If they were that transparent about it, what does that look like?
I get what you're saying, but my point is that he doesn't need to say what he said. He just don't mention that this is your club and that you want. I need to bring up the quote so I don't misquote him, but he did allude to, I'm staying here.
My home, wasn't it? Something like that.
Yeah, and then to leave a year later, it was kind of like, oh, you probably didn't mean everything that you said there. Because he basically inferred that this is everything that he wants and nothing would change it. And, you know, Villa fans aren't stupid, but we were kind of made to feel like that was the plan. This guy's going to be...
Yeah, because I suppose if he just leaves because a club's come in for him, you kind of go, well, no one foresaw that coming, but signing the contract knowing there is a specific figure that if someone activates it, everyone involved with that deal knows that that's in the background. So don't go too heavy on the, this is my club, everyone, because you know that's there. Yeah.
What they should have done was, you know, release it as, you know, Grealish signing a deal, fantastic. Obviously don't say there's release clause, but, you know, say to Jack, you know, say you're happy, but don't give it the kind of the big one that this is everything that you want. And again, he is a Villa fan. His family are massive Villa fans. There's no, you know, they didn't mean to hurt fans and hurt the club stuff. This is just football, and people who aren't within football like us will never understand what it's like. So I don't want to kind of be that guy.
I love the phrasing of that, of like, Jack, just say you're happy. And it's like, say you're happy. Tell him you're
here.
He
was happy. He must have been happy with the money that Villa put him on as well. But yeah, it's just the whole, yeah, we've gone over.
Yeah, right, let's move on. Let's move on to something stupid to lighten the mood a little bit. This one just says, I prefer 1874 to your show. That's fair enough, isn't it? Everyone's got their opinion.
I listen to Villa podcasts and I don't listen back to our one. So I'm probably not helping in our, I don't know how YouTube works and the algorithm and stuff, but I probably don't help either. It doesn't matter. It's not a competition, is it? That's the
no, and that one also came from Dan Bardell. So yeah, bit biased.
There we go. I'm going to mention that at the start.
No, I just thought I wanted to get your actual reaction to it. Yeah, he tweeted saying something. I can't believe you didn't know that was me. It's like, I knew it was you because no one else would think that.
Come on. There we have it.
Right, next one. I think the reason we're struggling to come up with a good design for a badge is because it's actually really difficult to make a lion look cool. Now, I can't get on board with this at all. Like, surely the lion is one of the most cool animals you could be, no?
Yeah, I just like the lion that they had. It's the one that I asked you to produce for me then, but it was trademarked. So you couldn't use it when we did our badges. If you just type in Aston Villa lion, and it's like a black and white version. I think the club
with loads of detail on it.
Yeah, loads of detail, talons and all sorts. Like, it looks fierce and ferocious. I just want that as the badge. And you can put AVFC on it or a star on the top or whatever. But that's just universal then. This is Aston Villa Lion. And I disagree with the comment.
It's just the notion that certain animals can look more cool than others. Like, if I was putting a tier list together of the most cool animal, lion would certainly be up in the top.
Yeah, you're not gonna have a canary, are you?
No, but even if it's something like a penguin or a slug or something, you go, well, obviously, yeah, that's difficult to make that look cool. It's not a cool animal, is it? But
what?
A lion, a tiger, an eagle, like anything like that is like prestigious. It's royalty. Yeah, yeah. It's the eagle is the American president or whatever. You know, like the stature related to these animals. If it's like a hippo or something, so fair enough. But lion, come on, lions are cool, aren't they?
Yeah, I think they mean it's hard to, in terms of a graphic, hard to make it look cool. But again, I disagree. I just think you can make a big, fierce lion. For me, that would be like the centerpiece. Like, that is it. You know, I don't think you need shields and round badges and other stuff. Just have that because that's cool. And it looks good.
Do people use the word cool anymore, John?
Me a lot in this podcast.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Let's stick with the silliness, because there's some serious football ones, but they're serious and no one likes that. It's international break. Come on, let's lighten up. This one says, I have to say, forget about self-pouring pints. The club should invest in self-serving Balti pies or self-serve chips and curry sauce. No more playing fast and loose with what coverage of sauce to chip. Those who love a cover, have as much as you want. Those that want some wet and some dry, boom. Is this something you've ever thought about, John, when you're at boom? Does anyone say boom anymore? No, probably not. Not like that, anyway. Is this something you've thought about when you're queuing up for your halftime nibbles? Oh, I wish this was a self-serving chips and curry sauce so I could lather sauce everywhere.
In the press suite, it's self-serving, so but I suppose that gives a good
living the dream, John. Living the dream.
I know, man. Living it. But that gives me a good I suppose comparison, because obviously I was a season ticket holder for many years and I understand the pain. It's difficult. I mean, to be honest, this probably just comes down to catering provision at Villa Park in general. This is probably turning into a serious question now. Obviously it needs to improve. The owners have put a lot of money, or are going to put more money into the Villa Park experience, because they're not building the North Stand. So a lot of the money, or some of the money, is going to be put towards, as I say, the experience, what fans, what match day is like at Villa Park, and it does need to improve. And yeah, the question is correct. You know, it's, you shouldn't be queuing up for so long for a bottle of water or a pie. Like, it's not on. So yeah, hopefully that stuff comes to pass. I don't know how you would do the whole self-service food. I don't know how that would work. I think some people would probably get carried away. So
yeah, you're bound to get people going like all curry sauce and just a few chips, and then it's all sorts of mess, isn't it, then?
Oh, you'll get people doing like all the sauces or something, and it'll be problems for the toilets then, wouldn't it? Like, it's not worth thinking about.
Yeah, all right, let's move on. Let's go with a football one. This is quite a serious thing as well, and I have to say, just reading it, I do disagree. I genuinely think Matty Cash should be sold in the summer. He's on a fairly decent wage, and long-term just is not good enough for where we want to be. So as I can split that into two parts. If he is here for the long-term, that's long-term, two more seasons. Is he good enough for Villa want to get into the top four, or are in the top four? And if he isn't, should he be sold this summer? Is that worth doing? Is it worth cashing in on Cash?
Yeah, good pun. To be honest, I think the last week or two has probably proved why he is still, I say important, still, you know, why he should still be part of the squad moving forward, because he's had excellent performances against Ajax, West Ham, in other games as well recently. I'll be the first to say I don't think he was, you know, up to his level as such at the start of the season. I've been, you know, pretty critical of him at times, but I'll give him his praise as well in the last few weeks. I think he's been excellent. And no, I don't think he should be sold. I think what I would say is basically the same as what I said about Leon Bailey in the summer last summer, which is, you know, some players might not be playing at their best level, or they might be inconsistent, or fans might have a view about them, or they might not think that Emery rates them, etc., etc. And I don't think any of that is the case for Matty Cash, by the way, because he's, you know, he's still at the football club and he's playing games. He's also a different profile to Ezri Konsa. Emery sees it as, you know, two different players, basically. So no, I wouldn't expect him to leave in the summer, or Villa would, or the Villa would want to cash in on him as well. And the point I was making about Bailey was, well, as I say, yes, you know, some players might not be playing at the best level, but that doesn't mean you then sell them to bring someone in. It means that you might want to bring someone else in to, you know, improve competition, which then improves Matty Cash. I don't see a valid reason why you'd sell him unless there was a big offer made. But that would be the case for any player. If any offer is made for any of our players, we would have to look at it and think, well, is this something that we want to do? I don't think we'd flat out refuse any offer for anybody.
The next one is a long one, so I will not see your reaction, John, here until I come back off this page. I wanted us to lose every game under Alex McLeish. My hatred for Blues is so high that his signing spoiled my support of Aston Villa for a whole year. I kept my season ticket and only did about 8 away games, but I couldn't enjoy it as I knew deep down I really wanted us to lose so they'd be quick to get rid of him. I simply could not support the man. It was a lot different to Steve Bruce, in my opinion, having just won Blues their first trophy in an age, knocking us out in the quarters. I couldn't even celebrate Wyman's last-minute winner against Fulham properly. I knew they'd credit McLeish with the substitution. My favourite moment of the season was Wigan away, when the whole away end let McLeish know that he had fully lost everyone's support. I knew that come the summer, there was no chance he would be there, and I could look forward again to following Villa with a full heart. Thoughts?
I like the Andy Vyman bit. If there was players that I didn't like, or a manager that I didn't like, or rate, or whatever it may be, you're still supporting your club at the end of the day, aren't you? It kind of goes into the realms of, like, do you want your team to win if it meant that the manager got sacked if you were doing bad? You know, there's often that kind of conversation.
Even pre-match, like the night, I'm thinking of the night we lost to Fulham when Gerrard was sacked. I don't know whether pre-game I'd be thinking, I really hope we lose tonight because that might be the final nail in the coffin. Because football is so unpredictable. It might not be. It might be another 6 weeks. Then you think, well, we've lost that game for nothing now. I know they all build up to someone losing their job. But I think as it's happening, again, I don't know how the score's going. Whatever the scoreline, if we're losing at half-time, let's say, in that Fulham game, which I think we were, I'd be thinking, okay, I don't really mind if we go on to lose this because we're already losing, because it could lead to that. But I don't think pre-game I could ever think, well, hope we lose today because that might be the end of the manager. That just doesn't feel right for some reason. It's fine that this person did it for an entire season. Everyone supports the club differently, but to me that just feels strange to actively want us to lose. The only club I want to lose all the time is Birmingham. And even then, I don't really care. Like, leaving them to do their own thing, I don't really care what they're doing.
Yeah, I don't know if the chap was wanting us to lose games to get... I probably was, to be fair, if he hated him so much. I think kind of answering the question in a different way, it would be like, let's just say, wanting us to lose to get a manager sacked. I've never kind of felt like the need for Villa to lose the game. But what I would say is that I've felt like a different emotion when we score or if we were to win, because it was the feeling of, where are we going? Like, what?
Yeah.
You know, kind of what's the point in a horrible way?
We've won, but at what cost?
It wasn't nice. Like when we beat Southampton 1-0 under Gerrard, I'll never forget that game because it just felt like, you know, what almost like what was the... didn't feel like we won. It was like the worst win ever because we won 1-0. But it just felt like we know that this isn't working. It's not going to change in terms of what Gerrard was doing unless we start to lose games. But then you don't want to lose games. So it was really just difficult and horrible. And after every defeat and draw, like I remember when we drew to Forest, I just thought, like, well, this has to change. It has to be over at some point. Like, although we haven't lost the game and we've drawn or whatever, we come back from behind to get a 1-1. It just didn't feel right, even though we probably should have won that game anyway. And I know I'm kind of going off to something different now, but yeah, it's I never want Villa to lose, but I will never want that because it's the club that comes first ultimately. Like, I want us to 23 points, but it would feel different, I think, because you know that it's like, well, what's that win got us in the long run of the season, shall I say? Which is what it felt like under Gerrard, really, for a period of time. Yeah. So, yeah, thank God we're not like anywhere near that anymore. It's it's like 3 points or death, basically, at this point.
just to pick up on something I said at the start of that last one, because I feel like somebody or multiple people may do in the YouTube comments, and I won't have a chance of a right to reply. Do you actively want Birmingham City to lose games every week? Or do you go into the weekend thinking, I hope they lose?
No, I wouldn't know they were playing. Like, don't get me wrong, if the result came up on the Gillette soccer thing and they're at home to Millwall and Millwall score, I'll chuckle. but then if Blues come back and win, you do you, lads, that might get you up to 15th or something. I'm not bothered. I don't care. Would I want Blues to lose games? Yeah. Because there are rivals, but no, I'm not refreshing my phone and stuff like they would be.
it's a weird one, isn't it? Like, me and my dad often will text each other, like, at the end, 5 o'clock on a Saturday, like, Blues lost again, haha. And it's like, that's it, then I don't give it any more thought until they lose again on the Wednesday night or whatever.
Yeah. I feel like Blues fans are like, and again, it's all tribal. I mean, it is for Villa fans, isn't it? I don't know. I think Blues fans literally hate our bones, and some Villa fans will like Blues fans as well. I don't like Birmingham myself, but I feel like they have no shame about it. Like, they are almost anti-Aston Villa fans than they're Birmingham fans in some way. that's the vibe I get from a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them, yeah, kind of hate Villa before they like Birmingham. That's the kind of sense I get. Whereas most of us anyway, I'd have thought, or I know, are Aston Villa fans, and then Birmingham play at some point, and yeah, we laugh if they concede.
They're just so irrelevant that I'd rather they lost.
That might be it.
Without
being rude, that might be it. And I think if they were promoted to the Premier League at any point, then maybe there'd be more of a kind of free nature to it, because it would be like, hopefully they'd be nowhere near us in the Premier League anyway. But you know what I mean? It's more of a thing. And to be fair, in the Championship, it did feel like that, because you were more invested in the Championship, which means you were more invested in what teams were doing, and therefore Birmingham. But yeah, as you say, at the moment, they are irrelevant to where Villa are, so it's difficult to pay attention to them.
Let's go to this one next, who says, I can't remember my first Aston Villa game. Everyone remembers their first game. Do you remember yours, John, quickly?
I can't remember. Sorry, what? That's just clear. You can't remember your first Villa game?
Hold on, wait, we'll come back to that.
Who said that this is an anonymous question?
They're not questions. You've said this a couple of times, John. They're not questions. Sorry. They're just thoughts and opinions. And
anonymous. They're confessions, aren't they?
Confession, yeah. The title of the show. I can't remember my first Aston Villa game. Everyone remembers their first game. My first memory of watching Villa is, for some reason, standing in the away end with thousands of Sunderland fans. They won 3-0, I think, late 1970s. But that was not my first game. Do you remember your first game?
Yeah. It was Villa at home. We lost 2-1 to West Ham. I think it was on my birthday, or it was the day after. So like mid-January 2006. Yeah, I don't remember much from it. I think West Ham scored a penalty. And I just... Well, the only thing that I properly remember is walking in the ground and like looking at it and like looking around and thinking like, wow, like I didn't know this existed, sort of thing. Like, I know football was played on like grass and people went to watch, but I didn't know it was like this like scale. That's not literally what I was thinking in my head, but that's what I'm imagining.
That's like a 6-year old.
Yeah, I can still like vaguely picture it, if I make it like really weirdly, even though it was so long ago. Because it's so grand, especially Villa Park. Like it's the lights, because it was a night game as well. The lights, all the seats, like the empty stands as well, probably made it even more, because it's just like a massive, do you know what I mean? It's something that you can't really forget.
Well, John, I found the game you're talking about, and there's a couple of corrections. You must be talking about the same one, because you've got the scoreline right. Marlon Harewood scored a penalty for West Ham. That was the winner. Bobby Zamora scored the other. Lee Hendry scored for Villa. Everything adds up, January 2006, but the kickoff time was 3 o'clock. but it would have been dark.
It would have been dark.
So
I'll forgive
you that. I don't remember my first game.
You don't?
Now, there's a little...
Really?
There's a kind of a little bit of a backstory here. So I started going to SAC. I probably would have been at that game that you're talking about. I don't remember it, but I probably would have been there. My first season ticket, I think, was that season. So I would have been going. I had an interest in Villa then. I'd have been 10 at that point. I've got this really vivid memory. This is going to sound absolutely insane. I've got this really vivid memory of my first game being at Villa Park, Lower Trinity. I don't think specifically where I am now, but a similar area. So I kind of, in my mind's eye, I can picture like where I'm on the pitch looking out at, and it's low down, which is where I am now. It's a night game. It's League Cup or FA Cup, and it's lower league opposition. I can't remember the result, but I think we won. I've got this
seems to be pretty detailed. You could probably find it on...
This is the thing, John. I've got all that detail, and I can't find a single lower league opposition cup game around that time. It didn't happen.
No.
So I've either got lost in the detail somewhere that it wasn't a cup game and it was a crap Premier League team at the time, whoever, or it was a cup game, but it wasn't as bad as opposition as I thought they were. So there's something in there. I can't go back and go like, oh yeah, it was the 1-1 against Preston in... February 2004 or whatever. Yeah. Like, I can't physically go and find it, but that's the weird memory I've got. It's a shame I can't remember my first game as vividly. Like, I've got this memory of being there, but I don't know specifically. Like, you were like, oh yeah, West Ham, they scored a penalty. I don't have that, but my memory is crap anyway, as we've established on the podcast.
Fair enough. My second game was against Watford, which is a home win. So that was my first win as a Villa fan. Again, I don't remember any of that. But I remember parts of it, but
is that the Ezri Konsatoro Mings goal?
Taking them. No, it wasn't.
Let's move on. If people can remember their first game, I'm sure they can. Let us know in the comments down below. This one probably resonates with you, John, possibly. I get a lot more nervous about games against smaller teams, which we should win, than the big six / European games.
It depends who. If we're talking like City away or Arsenal away, I'm not as, because it feels like a bit like a free hit. But no, the rest of them, because they're your competition. I think previously when...
Probably is it the way around though in years gone by where you'd think, well, we're not going to do anything that's Man United, but losing to Norwich at home because they're right down the bottom with us, that would be bad. It's the reverse of that now.
Yeah, but no, now I'm more confident against the lower teams, should we say. I feel more nervous when Villa go ahead, I think. When Villa concede, I feel like, kind of what it'll be will be. This happens, I'm annoyed, whatever, but I can, take it.
We'll score two.
But if we score, oh my God, like my heart rate's all over the place and I'm kicking every ball, it's horrible because you feel like everything's out of control. It's probably just me and this chap that feel like that. I don't know. But it's when we go ahead, I particularly feel bad because it feels like we're onto something and that we don't want to blow it, especially late goals and stuff. It's horrible. So I'll never forget. I don't know. I probably will. But the Tottenham game, the away game when we were winning 2-1, God, that was bad because Tottenham were just attacking every other minute and we were, kind of getting peppered. It wasn't horrific because we were catching offside a lot. So it was like, okay, fair play to Villa, but it wasn't good for your heart. Like Son scored a couple goals and I was just looking at the linesman like, please be offside, and he'd have his flag up and it'd be like, thank God, that sort of thing. Oh, it was hell because you've got Tottenham fans all around you. So you feel like you're an imposter. It's not good, that sort of stuff. But I always say it makes the wins feel a lot sweeter when you put through all that suffering and stress. It's only football. We really shouldn't feel like that, but that's just how it is. I think it's because we're onto something so big. I think that's what it is at the moment. Like we're onto something that's like I've never seen in my lifetime. I really want it to happen. And there's a lot of pressure on it. I feel like if it was we were catching up and stuff, we'd be like, oh, let's try and hopefully we get there. If not, it is what it is. But we've been here for so long now. Please don't let it go.
Just speaking there of being an imposter, you mentioned like you feel that way because you're in amongst the home end generally as the press box. You're in with the fans, obviously, to some degree, at the away ground. This person says, I once sat... oh, God. This is ridiculous. This has got to be a joke. This has got to be a wind-up. I once sat in the away end at Villa Park and had no idea I was going to be in there. I just presumed that I was going to be at the home end. I had my Villa colours on, but luckily I had a coat with me. It was Man United, who I hate the most. Not really a confession. It is a confession. Not really a confession, but I bet not many Villa fans have sat with the away fans at Villa Park. Now, I don't know when this was. I don't know if it's of years gone by where you had to phone up for your tickets and there was maybe some confusion. But surely you can't accidentally book in the away end as a home supporter in this day and age.
Well, that and it would be sold out, wouldn't it? Surely, especially Man United, because they will come from surrounding boroughs and London, No, I don't know. If it was like Fulham, I'd get it, because it would be like, okay, it probably goes down to... No, even then it would be like, you can't just general sale book a ticket, can you?
Nah, this has got to be a modern thing,
Yeah, when you're turning up and they're not singing the songs that you'd expect them to.
Now, I don't want to cast aspersions onto this person that they don't have common sense, but I am about to do that. If that was me, would you not go to a steward and say, I think I'm in the wrong section, can you... Is there anywhere else I can be moved to? I'm clearly a Villa fan, look. Can you, that seat's empty, can I just sit in there?
I don't think you would, because you'd probably just get kicked out because you don't have a ticket.
Because if you said, I bought this one by mistake, they'd go, you're having a laugh.
And I feel like and when you're there, you're there. Like you obviously don't want to, especially Man United, because I presume we've lost that match as well.
Good chance.
you wouldn't enjoy it sitting next to them, but then you also wouldn't enjoy it in the home end. So you're there, on the off chance that you win. Could be a laugh.
Final one then for this episode. There's loads more, so we can probably do it part four in the next few months. I like to have these little different podcasts every so often, and it's been an enjoyable chat so far. Final one, very simple. I only listen to this podcast for Matt Kendrick's nonsense. Please discuss. Well, Matt's not here for this one, so he cannot discuss, but that's a fair opinion. That is something that we hear every so often, that Matt is somebody's favourite, or they like his jokes or his stupid analogies and that kind of thing. And that's absolutely fine for people to enjoy different people's perspectives on the show. Like, I can't imagine a Claret and Blue podcast episode, yes, but the podcast as a whole where Matt Kendrick is not involved in some way. Like, he is an integral part to what we do, and absolutely fair enough to have that opinion of that as well. I love hearing his stupid things when we were in the office Monday and he starts talking about blood tests and can't get his thing in the parking ticket. How is that an Aston Villa podcast? It's not, is it? But this is what we've built now, and we can kind of take it where we want, and I love that about what we do.
Yeah, it probably breaks up the serious stuff or the shit that I... Oh, sorry, I shouldn't say. the rubbish that I spout out or trying to analyse football. It's good to have different perspectives and whatnot, and obviously we have different... contributions from different... I won't name them all because I'll forget one, and that's always awkward. But they know who they are. And sorry, I nearly knocked my light over. it's turning into a mess, like Matt Kendrick. And good to have different contributions, different perspectives, as I say, and it makes it better when we add other people, other fans come on and give their opinions and stuff. I think that all helps. It's different.
The phone in, perspective,
different, different perspectives, different voices and stuff. So it's all good.
Well, John, I did not prepare you with the running order for this show for obvious reasons. I wanted your actual reaction to the confessions rather than knowing them in advance. And the last note I put on there was, tell people about the next phone-in show. We will be here on StreamYard at 6:30 next Monday. That is the 25th of March. If you would like to be on the show and want to get involved, please send me an email. My email address is in the description of this podcast, so scroll down, whether you're on YouTube or audio platforms, it will be there saying, send Dan an email. Say to me, I want to be on the show, I want to talk about this, I want to talk about that, and we will pencil you in for next Monday, 6:30 till 7:30, 7:45, something like that. We'll be around for an hour, so kind of join the call whenever suits you during that time period. What I will say, and this could go one of two ways, if you were on the first episode, no disrespect, this is not the way it's intended, don't come on again.
Oh, harsh.
And that's not a, you were crap.
Oh, they were great, Dan.
No, so did I, John, so did I. Don't take this the wrong way. We just want variety. We had probably 20 people come to us last time and say, I'm interested, and we used about 6. So we don't want to use the same 5 again and then 3 or 4 more. We want to have a brand new 10, for example. thousands of people, that sounds like a brag, thousands of people listen to this podcast. If we only ever speak to the same 5 or 6 people, it's not fair, is it? So if you want to be on the show and you weren't on it last time, please email me and we'll book you in. I'm going red because I'm just getting all embarrassed about this as if I'm like slagging people off, but I'm not. I just want to balance and to offer fairness to different people. John, thank you for your time this evening recording this one. It's been great fun. Thank you for watching or listening. Get involved in the YouTube comments with your thoughts on people's confessions, and we'll see you again very soon. Cheers, everyone.